This is Haunted America with your host, Josh Mantello and Al Shepard on Blog Talk Radio. To discuss today's topics, call 646-716-5896. And now, Haunted America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Al Shepard. This is Haunted America Radio, and I have no clue where my co-host is. I don't see him in the chat room. He's not in the switchboard. And I don't know where the heck he's at. So this might be a short show tonight because I'm not going to sit here for 2 hours and talk to myself. As amusing as that might be, I think it would get boring very, very quickly. So I'm going to have to just look around here and wait for him to pop in. I see one guest in the chat room. Welcome. My co-host Josh is missing in action. I'm not quite sure where he's at, so we're just going to sit here for a few and rattle off at the mouth and hope he shows up. If not, like I said, this will be one of the shortest shows we have because I'm have nothing on tap really to talk about tonight. Josh is usually the one that sets the agenda, so... He comes in and points me in the right direction here, and I just follow his lead, and which is why they call us the bipolar paranormal team, because you never know where we're going to wind up. So, last week was a good show. Again, Josh had to work last week. I don't know if he's working tonight or not. He didn't tell me, but we had a good show last week with Dustin Perry was here. And if you missed that show, I'll be playing a little five-minute medley here of some of his answers he gave last week. And definitely recommend going back and listening to the whole show. Let's see. Had a great Thanksgiving. Not much going on paranormal-wise. Seems like everybody's kind of taking it easy for the holidays. Saw a few new shows on. I see, I think it's January 6th, I think. Dustin said Ghost Hunters International would be returning with a new season. And I noticed it's going to be a marathon. It's going to be all day long from like 8 in the morning till midnight. And I believe that was Sci-Fi Channel. So I have to take a listen and watch that. Okay. I'm going to fire up this little medley here of some of Dustin's answers he gave last week. And if Josh comes back in, then I'll play it again for him a little later. But we'll fire this off right now. I didn't include the questions, just his answers. So if you want to know what the question was, go back and listen to last week's show. International, the what I found to be the probably one of the few normal paranormal researchers. I'm so happy to have Dustin Perry here with us. Dustin, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Al. How you doing tonight, brother? it's good to keep it real, you know? I've never been one of those star-eyed Hollywood types. I'm not going to buy any brand new sports cars anytime soon. Who's got the biggest EMF detector? The last thing you want to do is watch other people pull teeth. Pretty good with all the flowery dialect. And there seems to be something going on. Where, I like to joke that maybe that evil slime from Ghostbusters 2 is real. Say, oh, don't use Ouija boards. I think I'd use them if you want them. You know, they could be a fun little game. I don't think that Satan has brokered a deal with the good people at Parker Brothers to put out a board game to bring evil into the world. My little bit of high school Spanish only goes so far. Like I can translate very well if I was like talking to somebody like Dora the Explorer. He's like, well, you're not Madonna. I said, well, no, sir. You're very observant. I clearly am not Madonna. Kind of works like Whiskers, like kind of cat. Both fashionable and function. Be a tale of some guy who ate a lot of sugary snacks, watched a lot of cartoons, and just worked all the time. So I would have never agreed to go back out on the program. They're not nearly as fun as they used to be. You know, I watch the shows now with my daughter and stuff, and everything's in two different languages at least. And the storylines aren't that interesting. There's not a lot of violence, so it's not really funny. Big dose of violence in it. It's got some adult storylines in there that are underlying. It's pretty funny. I like that quite a bit actually. It's quite funny. I have one that I carry around my wallet that my grandmother gave me when I was a little kid, and I still have it, and I keep it in my wallet all the time. Whether you are celebrating Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, or Christmas, maybe you're just a winter solstice person, it works across the board. It's a wonderful unanimous gift. I'm a big karaoke whore. You know what's really been working for me? The theme song from Legend of Zelda, the old Nintendo game. We kind of had similar crazy hairstyles, so I guess it all comes together. Sometimes, you know, we're at Walmart or something, a girl starts screaming like one of the Beatles, and we're back in 1964. For my research and stuff, it seems they can be tricky little SOBs, so it's definitely something you gotta be cautious around. If I didn't have to shop there, you know, if they didn't have stuff on sale, I wouldn't be there, man. I hate Walmart. You throw out the baby with the bathwater, and now we're back at square one. You know, things like Google Maps are out there. I can see a picture of your backyard taken from space. It's only an idea. It's only something that I'm kind of toying around with. I don't know if it's pain, anger, or whatever, but there seemed to be something that, you know, wasn't enjoying it. You don't want to start out like I did. You don't want to be out in the woods in the middle of the night and getting pushed up against some police cars. You know, here comes the big bad American. Next thing I know, I'm laying there flat on my back. Not playing with the full deck, so they're just like, just let this guy go. It's not worth the time. I think it was an important experience for me, though. But funny enough, the person who I see get harassed the most is Joe Chin. Well, I don't know what it is they're looking for on little Joe Chin. Sometimes I live on peanut butter and bread. But hey, you know, whatever works, whatever will get me through there. Cookie dough is fantastic to travel with, too. I've only been on the planet 30-something years. I've already peed in the ocean enough to know that I should be eating out of it. Dinosaurs that are dead in there, mobsters, all kind of stuff I don't want to be eating off of. I'm kind of an old school romantic that way. You know, I try to be very gentlemanlike. I like to hold open doors for people, say hello, wave people across the traffic. I actually get affronted sometimes when I let somebody go. They don't wave thank you. They just kind of stare at you. They just talking on their cell phone and eating their donuts. And they just drive by you. It's like, well, why the hell did I stop for you? You're not nice at all. As I mentioned earlier, don't eat out of the ocean. Too many people have died, defecated, and urinated in it. It's not a good idea, especially sushi. You should never eat anything that's not cooked. It just doesn't seem to make much sense.
Right. That was a kind of a collage, audio collage of some of the answers that Dustin gave to some of my questions last week. Definitely taken out of context. So if you want to hear what the questions were that elicited those answers, please go back and listen to last week's show. And it seems like this week's probably going to be a good time to do that. My co-host Josh is working again tonight. I didn't realize that, or I would have canceled the show completely for tonight because we have no guest scheduled. It was going to be just him and me bouncing off each other, but come to find out, he's working. So it's just me sitting here with you guys in the chat room. So unless we can come up with something halfway decent to discuss, I'm going to make it an early night tonight. So if you guys got any ideas, something you want to talk about, I'm definitely not going to sit here for the next hour and 49 minutes talking to myself. So for some of you that's just joined us, back at when we first came on the air, I had a bunch of little clips that I put together from some of the shows, paranormal shows, and maybe I'll throw a couple of them in here right now. Here's what I consider a classic episode of Ghost Hunters.
So I'm in here in Tasman, and I have to use the bathroom. It's kind of like snuck up on me. I was trying to look for any other toilet, you know, around the neighborhood, and I'm really looking to find one. Real bad.
Dude, just go. If you got a gun,
just want to.
Dave, here.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, not a problem.
All right.
Now in this bathroom, she said that the overhead light turns on and off on its own.
Yep.
Which is weird because if you look here, it was a sensor at one time.
Yep.
You see that?
Ooh, smell sensor, light sensor.
Who's that? Anybody?
I don't know. Somebody left to go outside. Oh my god. That was just wrong. I'm glad I picked Mexican because I think he had what Chinese.
Tango took a crap in there. The vapor starts here. Right here. You can smell it from here. Permeating. Right out. Absolutely disgusting. And I like number twos. I do. Like I do. They're fun for everybody. But when you have to smell someone else's...
Mr. Hankey.
Steve for Tango?
This is Tango. Go ahead. Go, Steve.
Did you blast out that bathroom on purpose?
No, I had to use the bathroom. It was no other way out.
Tango, Chris and I went in there to try to debunk it.
The light that goes on and off? And I almost fell down. The smell was so bad. I literally almost
fell to my knees. My nostrils are honestly numb right now. I haven't smelled anything else in 20 minutes.
All I smell is bad still.
Hey, man, I tried to look for other places that use, for a toilet. That's the only place I could find. I apologize.
Next time, dig a hole, number two in the hole, cover it up, and that's okay.
Dig a hole? All right. Steve walkies me, and, he tells me, he didn't appreciate what I left in there prior. I mean, I flushed. I'm not saying I left it in there, but I had to use the bathroom. I guess he didn't appreciate the smell, but it was worth it, man. I had to do it.
Just turned on.
It's a machine, but...
Let's go towards it and just see what we're dealing with. Oh, wait a second. There it is.
It's blowing out.
It's just air. It's not even heat or anything.
Oh,
it smells.
I know. Oh, I know what it is.
What?
Someone's in the bathroom and they put the thing on. The vent. And that's the fuck. That's the
that
poo
just,
smell. What?
We just inhaled someone's poo smell right out of the
Oh man, them guys at Ghost Hunters. Some of the things they go through.
Got a long time to go, so hope we don't get hemorrhoids.
Are you really concerned about that?
Yes, I am, because there's a long ways to go. Looks like Carrie from Magic Paranormal is going to be calling in, and everyone else deserted the chat room, so I guess it's going to be just the two of us talking here shortly. Let's see, what else we got here in our little collection of interesting tidbits here?
You believe this load of crap?
No, I don't whatsoever.
Dude, run!
So it's freaking hilarious. I can do that one. Is it professional? No,
no. You're right. I'm sorry.
Anyways, just south of us here, down where Josh is in North Adams, Massachusetts, is the Houghton Mansion, and not too far past that is the Hoosick Tunnel, a 5-mile-long train tunnel, which is reported to be haunted. James, who's a member of the band called the Blue Pages, after they played in the area one night, they decided to go down there and just kind of take a look around, snoop around, and see what they could find. And here's what he had to say.
All right, this is Al. I'm here with a band called the Blue Pages, who, let's see, your name is James?
Yes.
All right, now it's about what, a month ago or so, you guys came up here and played in Bennington. And after the show, you went down to the Hoosick Tunnel, right? So it was about
correct.
Midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning?
We got there at about 1 a.m.
All right. So you got to tell me what happened when you got there.
So we get up there, and the weird thing is, like, because, you know, you drive down a big hill to get to the Hoosick Tunnel.
Yeah.
And the first thing you notice is, like, you see, like, you don't see any foxes anywhere, like, on the road, anywhere around, like, you know, the city or whatever. But then right when you go down the specific hill, there's, like, tons of foxes just running around like crazy. And they're, so you drive down, and there's, like, you walk on, and right when you get down, there's, like, tons of fireflies also everywhere.
Right.
But you can see this little black, the light shuts off, like, right where, like, in 20 feet past that is where the Hoosick Tunnel is. And you can't even see the thing, and you have to walk down the train tracks. So we get off, and
you're on the Florida Mass side, right?
Yeah, the Florida Mass. So we stop off to get out there. And first, like, nobody would go with me, so I just started walking by myself, and I was like, screw this, this is so freaky. So I went back there and got my drummer and our merch guy to come with us. So they came with us. And we started walking up, and all of a sudden, because I read a lot of online blogs about it, and, like, it's pretty rare for a train to pass by, you know? And,
yeah.
Like, but all of a sudden, like, there's no lights or nothing. You just see a light down in the tunnel. And first, I was like, what is that? What is that? And finally, you start to hear it, and a train starts coming. So, like, I hadn't even got close to the thing yet, but, like, the train goes by, it passes by, which is pretty weird itself. So we started to walk up there. We're walking up there, and it's, like, it's crazy because, like, you know, in a lot of Asian cultures, like, foxes are the way to the spiritual world a lot of the times, you know? They're like really mythical creatures, and there's like they're running around everywhere, like they're running by you and stuff. And there's tons of fireflies. So you start to walk up, and right when all of a sudden the trees start to cover, and you can't see the moon anymore, everything stops right there. The light stops. You can't see anything past that. No fireflies past that. They're all sitting there, and then they just stop right there where that light is. And you walk past the light, and all of a sudden, just like all you hear is like the electricity from the tunnel going off.
Yeah.
And so we start walking up there, and we're like 10 feet away, and like the guys behind me stop, and we're kind of like arguing about like, come on, let's keep going. And we get up there, and like, and all of a sudden the train starts to lights start going off again. So when the train's coming, the light's going off, it's blinking, going ding, 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 super loud. The lights are going off everywhere, and we wait. There's no train coming. There's no train in sight. It's still like we're sitting there. We wait for like a good like 15 minutes.
This is like what, 1 o'clock in the morning?
By this time it's like 1:30 a.m. We're sitting there waiting for the train. And it's just, nothing comes, nothing ever comes. So then we're sitting arguing, like, all right, screw this, turn around. So we turn around and go back, and right when we turn around, we say, all right, we're done with this, we're going back. Exactly right when that happens, the lights, just where the lights were going off, the sound stops. Everything stops right when we start walking back, like, in that instance, and there's a guy sitting in the tracks underneath this light. There's one light in the place. It's just down, it's about, I'd say 30 yards. Down, kind of close to where we parked the car, and there's a guy just standing there, staring at us, and we're like, what is going on here? We're kind of freaking out, because we're like, I don't know if this is like just some guy who has a gun, who has something like, you know, we're like...
Yeah, because this at that end of the tunnel is kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's an older man, and he's just sitting there, and this is a like, it's like between 1:30 and 2 a.m., you know, when this is going on. So it's like, you know, if a man's out here, why is he... And this is, what was it, a Thursday night? It was a Thursday night, so it's
yeah.
Like, what is a man doing out here at a Thursday night? And we weren't being, you know, like loud, and we were super quiet, so it's like, and we weren't even, I wasn't even like had a flashlight, so nobody could have seen it, you know? I mean, I had one with me, but I wasn't shining it, you know? And like, and so we're like, what is this man doing out here? And so he's just staring at us, and we're stopped, and we're staring at him. So we start to walk towards him, and as we walk towards him, he's still looking at us, but backing up. He doesn't turn to back up and make any signals. He's just hands down by his side, staring at us, moving backwards. And we're just like, holy crap. And like, so I start to move to the right because I'm trying to get towards the woods in case, like, you know, it's a real person, then I can like run through the woods or something, or like, I don't know, you know. And so like, as I move to the right, he's still moving at, like, looking at us, and moving to the opposite side, moving to the left, just moving backwards. And there's an electrical unit right there, those big gray ones, and he just walks behind that and disappears into the woods. And we didn't see like anything after that. And like, so we get back there, and the weirdest part was our singer and bass player were still in the car, and they had one of the windows was down, and they were staring where the light was. They said they did not see a guy standing there at all. They didn't hear any sound, and the sound was super loud, you know. It's like, and the light was so loud, it was so flashing, it's like you can't miss it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like they didn't hear or see anything. And so we were just like, oh, we gotta get out of here. And so we just like called us out of there.
Welcome to the haunted Hoosier Tunnel.
We actually went back there another time, and it was like, it was sort of misty when we got out. Same thing, lots of foxes just by the Hoosier Tunnel, and like, lots of fireflies again. They stop at the light, so we get out and start walking again. And right when we get to the black part where the light cuts off again, and like, all you can hear is the electrical unit. All of a sudden, a storm just flies in right there, and it's like lightning striking everywhere, just like saying, "Hey, don't come in here." You know, so we're like, especially all electrical unit and stuff, because you can't, like, once you get to that point, like, you can't hear anything anymore, except for like, it sounds like people are walking around you.
That's a freaky place.
And there's like little rocks, and it seems like eyes are looking at you everywhere, and it's like super freaky. So like, right when the lights start going off, we turn around again. So we haven't even been able to go in. Every time we've gone there, it's like, as soon as we get to that point, it's like something happens that says, can't come in here.
It's crazy. From what I remember, it's like 128 people died in that, making that tunnel.
And over around a little less than 200 died since then.
It's crazy. So. But, all right, I appreciate you telling your story.
I hope I wasn't mumbling too much.
No, not at all.
Actually, I think the guy suffered from ADD. That's the problem. All right, on the phone with me now is Carrie from Magic Paranormal, and she's got something she wanted to discuss. So welcome to the show, Carrie.
Well, thank you, Alan. I appreciate it. I appreciate being here, actually. And Blog Talk Radio has been an interesting tool, I shall say. I see a lot of people out in the community are using Blog Talk to talk with different people that have been out in the field for a long time. And it's interesting because you hear different thoughts, different theories, different things of that nature. But in lieu of you know, not having a guest, and I apologize for that.
No, actually, we... Every now and then I try not to have a guest, because then Josh and I can just sit here and kind of be our bipolar selves and bounce all over the place, whatever, you know, whatever happens to flow into our mind at the time. So I actually scheduled it that way. I've got a couple people on the hook coming up. I've got Wheezy, Brian Harnois from Ghost Hunters, and I sent a message over to John Zaffis, and we got a few good guest coming up in the future here. But this week I thought Josh was going to be here, and come to find out he's working till 9:30. So ordinarily I would have just canceled the show. So I'm glad you came on board here to bail me out for a little while anyway.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad to be here, actually. It's interesting. Just to give you a little background history on my team, and a lot of people are like, well, who are you? I've been doing this for 10 years. I've been out in the paranormal field for a long time, actually, right basically a year or two after TAPS even started. You know, when their website was only one or two pages, now it's this, you know, large paranormal community. It's interesting to see, you know, the growth of the paranormal field and everything that has taken place, you know, over the years, especially of the paranormal boom on TV. But anyhow, I wanted to put forth something, and it's something that me and a bunch of other investigators that I've talked with, you know, throughout the country that are working on. And it has to do with humidity and investigating, and basically there have been times where, you know, doing investigations, we're out, and the higher the humidity, it seems and it's apparent, not only have we logged different things, but we seem to get more residual EVPs that seem to come through. And I don't know if other groups are, you know, really keeping track of the humidity, and I've heard, you know, different things with the moon phases and, you know, other scientific ideas that might come into play, but I just wasn't sure if you've heard of anything of that nature.
Actually, I've heard something, well, I'm trying to pull up a website address here right now. Michael Baker was one of our first guests on the show. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him. He's the director of the movie 14 Degrees.
Yes.
Okay, he's actually built a website. It's nationalevidence.org, O-R-G. It's the National Evidence Archives. And what he hopes to do with this is have groups from all over the world, like yourself, submit... Submit your findings from different investigations and put in as much information as you can, like time of day, what was the humidity level, you know, what the day of the month, what was the moon phase, all this stuff. And he hopes by getting enough people together to enter information into this database that we can start to find a pattern to some of these and see, so we can definitively say, okay, when the humidity is at 50%, we get more paranormal activity. So I'm hoping to get him back on the show here very shortly. He just sent me a message that he was looking for volunteers to help enter some of this data into this database. So that might be something you might want to look into and see if you can hook up with him, and that might answer your question.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I've, you know, with the moon phases and different things out there that people, you know, and I've noticed with my studies, and I've had another groups doing this for the past year or so, we've been logging the humidity, and we've seemingly have gotten positive results. It's to the point where on certain locations that we create a controlled environment where, you know, we'll go in and investigate on normal conditions, maybe the low humidity, you know, it might be the same exact time of day, it might be the same day of the month, it might be the same, you know, moon phase, but we've upped the humidity, you know, as much as possible and have gotten more, it seemingly seems to be more results. Does it have a play in it? It's the paranormal. You don't know exactly, but there does seem to be some sort of pattern that seems to be coming out with all of that study.
Well, yeah, that's like at this point in time, like I've been saying all along on just about every show, this is such a brand new field, and no one knows at this point what's right and what's wrong, and no one knows really what to look for. So the more readings like that you can take, the more information you can jot down about the environment, the better it's going to be in the long run when we start filtering through this and comparing it to others. So I think you're definitely on the right track by doing that, and I would be interested to see if anyone else is listening, if their groups have taken humidity readings or anything like that, and if they've gotten the same response that you've been getting.
It would be interesting. I would love to hear about that. We always hear about, you know, people go out to locations and they set up all their video equipment and different things like that, but you never really hear even on TV, they don't, you don't ever really hear if they're logging, you know, the different moon phases, or if they're logging the humidity readings, if they're logging, you know, if there was a husband and wife, and, you know, the husband was a little upset because a paranormal group was coming in, and then, you know, the energy, if the place is, you know, deemed haunted, if, you know, events are transpiring prior to, you know, something paranormal happening.
Well, you're not going to hear that on TV because that's not entertaining. It would probably bore most people to death. But that's the information we need to get through the back channels by interviewing the different groups and the people involved, and see if we can pull some of that information from them. Because I'll bet there's a good number of them probably that are logging quite a bit of information. They don't go talking about it because it would bore everybody to death that's not, you know, in the field themselves.
The only problem I see with that, though, to be honest with you, is sometimes, and how can I put this, and it's frustrating because, you know, somebody like yourself and myself, when we're out in the field and, you know, we're gathering evidence and we're trying to be as scientific and professional as possible, sometimes when stuff is on TV, some people believe what they see on those reality shows, and there's just so much more that goes on behind the scenes that people aren't privy to, and they go out and they start a group, and they get lost in the shuffle, basically.
Yep, exactly. I'm new at this myself. I've always had a fascination with the paranormal, and just about 6 months ago, I said, well, what better way to learn about the paranormal than to learn from the people that are involved themselves? And what better way to get to talk to them than to have your own radio show? So I got a hold of Josh down there at Berkshire Paranormal to be my resident expert. And basically I'm here just like the layperson and learning as I go. And since I've met Josh, I've been down to the Houghton Mansion and went through a couple investigations down there. Very interesting. I'm more coming from the standpoint, you know, where you investigate houses and things like that, and people that haven't yet crossed over. Where I'm looking to contact is the ones that have already crossed over, like Sarah Estep, the founder of AAEVP. She wrote a book, Voices of Eternity, and I read that where she simply went in her office 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes at night, turned on a tape recorder, and just started talking. And after about 6 months, she started getting answers. And then over a 20-year period, she carried on all these conversations with these people that had already crossed over and were supposedly in heaven, and then gave her all these descriptions of what it is like over there and what you can expect when you get there. So, you know, we're kind of coming at it at two different angles here, and they both fascinate me, so I just wanted you to know where I'm coming from. So you're kind of taking a place of Josh tonight, so I get to play devil's advocate with you sometimes.
No, that's totally fine. I have no problems answering any questions or, you know, anything that you want to throw at me. I'll be more than happy to answer.
Well, the one thing Josh and I have been bantering back and forth for the last 5-6 weeks is it possible to be an expert in the paranormal field?
That's been something. Now, just to let you know, too, is I'm also a Massachusetts state rep for International Paranormal Investigators, IPI. They're known globally. And that's something else that's been kicked around on their message boards and stuff, or it's the expert and also the certification. People want to certify somebody to be there, you know, have that specific, like a degree, like you go to college or something like that. And sorry if I get a little tongue-twisted here. An expert, I don't really believe that there can't be an expert per se, but there can be somebody who has a lot of knowledge or seasoned, so to speak. Expert, not like, you know, you go to a mechanic, the mechanic's been doing it for 20 years. This we're going after something that there's so many skeptics and cynics. It's not like, you know, you open a book and you read, you know, how to become a doctor, and, you know, you actually are physically, you know, out in the field and you're, you know, becoming an open-heart surgeon. We don't know exactly what's causing this in light of the woman from AEVP, and she was, you know, after 6 months, she started getting answers. And we have to be careful with the way we approach certain things, because now I believe it could go back from stemming from a religious aspect and you know, you hear of the demonic presence, and they can be tricksters and do different things like that. There's other things that, you know, out there in the field I've been doing. Like I said, I don't claim myself to be an expert. I've been doing this for 10 years. I've done I don't know how many investigations. I find that difficult.
Well, what I've always said is, you may have more knowledge doing a particular thing, you know, you're more of a specialist in a certain aspect of paranormal research, but I don't believe anyone can actually be considered an expert when we don't even know what's right and wrong at this particular point. You know, Josh is very well versed in spirit photography and things like that, and can talk all day about it. And like I told him a week or so ago, I said, you know, time will tell whether you're an expert or you're a kook, depending on whether you're going down the right path or not. Because at this point, we don't know if anybody's going down the right path or not. You know, we might find out 5 years from now that EMF detectors have absolutely nothing to do with detecting spirits, or you know, obelisk or any of those other things, the hack box or any of that stuff might turn out to be just picking up who knows what. And at this particular point in time, you know, I feel it's premature for anyone to call themselves an expert at this point.
I agree. I absolutely agree. A lot of the tools that are in a investigator's toolbox that they go out and investigate with, they're not specifically designed for this field. I mean, we're only using equipment that people think may work, like a recorder, getting, you know, EVPs. If I'm sitting in a room and I'm by myself and I'm asking questions, I know I'm alone. There's no way that there could be somebody else, or it could be picking up other signals, and my recorder's, you know, shielded to make sure it's not going to pick up any radio interference or anything like that. And I'm getting EVPs. We know that device is working. It's picking up something. If I say, well, do you like bananas? And, you know, you get an EVP back that says, no, I like banana splits. You know, so it's a direct response. That is something that I feel is a legitimate tool or device. EMF, in my opinion, yes, some of my investigators have them. I don't use one. I found that, yes, it's great to go into a person's house and, you know, you scan the walls and you see if it, and you hear this particular common term used all the time. It's called the fear cage. I've actually been doing some research in that too. Dave from Paranormal League of America did some more extensive research into, you know, the EMF and how it's really, even on the scientific factor of just EMF fields themselves, it really hasn't been proven to whether or not people actually get sick or they get this fear of paranoia. It's been talked about. It's been discussed. They have also talked about, you know, somebody who lives next to high tension wires and the EMF that it puts out, and it's proven to, you know, release something that creates carcinogens in the body, and it can create cancer and brain tumors and, you know, affect little children. Why, and it's funny because some of the, you would think that EMF, high energy, all the ghosts would be going to those houses, you know, if they're wandering the streets, you know, like an intellectual haunt or.
You'd think the electrical substations would be the most haunted places on earth.
Absolutely, but they're not. So, excuse me. So it makes you wonder. It makes you wonder, is there a real play, you know, in all of this? And I actually had this discussion last night. I started my own little blog talk radio thing there. And there was a woman, and she was about 86 years old, and her husband had passed away. Now, they lived in a really old house. She's never been sick in her life. Well, she might even have the flu or the cold or, you know, the typical, you know, ills and stuff like that. And basically, it's interesting because after her husband had passed, she started getting little reminders that he was still in the house. And we went there, we did an investigation, and the EMF baseline in there was just off the charts, off the charts. And here's this little old petite woman, never had been sick, lived in this house since her early 20s. It kind of makes you question if EMF is a real big factor in it. Is the high EMF actually helping her husband come through? Possibly. But as far as making her feel like she's being watched or different things like that, we actually got some evidence, some video and some certain things of things moving about. So I don't know. I'm not saying an EMF detector doesn't work, but it's not like you can sit there and hold it and all of a sudden you get a spike.
Could it be that certain people are more susceptible to EMF than others? Where, you know, different people in that same situation would feel paranoia and nauseous and things like that?
Yeah. It's possible because, I mean, everybody's diet's different. Some people get, you know, they take a daily supplement and get more minerals in their body. And, the way our body is chemically, you know, made up with, you know, basically mostly water. You know, and our body works on electrical impulses itself. So, I mean, if there's, you know, high mineral content in somebody's water, if they have high, you know, salt or, you know, fluoride or different other minerals that, and they, you know, are consuming more stuff, then it might be possible. And there's actually been a study about why certain people, when it's a full moon, because of the change in the magnetism of the Earth and the moon, they tend to feel more off than others. So I do feel that it's still possible, but yet it has not been proven in science itself.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in this field that haven't been proven. Just for everyone who's joined us in the chat room, my name's Al Shepard. Josh is apparently working tonight. He didn't let me know ahead of time, or I would have canceled the show altogether. And so Carrie is with us from Magic Paranormal, who graciously jumped right in here and saved me and gave me somebody to talk to so I didn't have to sit here and constantly play audio clips for 2 hours. Where are you based out of, anyways? Where's Magic Paranormal from?
Magic Paranormal. Magic actually stems from Massachusetts Area Ghost Investigators Coalition. We're in central Massachusetts.
Okay, so you're around Springfield somewhere, or?
Between Springfield and Boston, Worcester area.
Okay. All right. I'm up here in Bennington, Vermont, so I know right where you're at. I go through there a lot on my way to the coast in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I had a question in my head, and it went right back out the other side again. So you just said you started a blog talk radio of your show of your own?
Yes. I actually did my first show last night.
How'd that go?
At first, I think I was nervous because I'm always, you know, the one calling in, not the one posting. So at first it's like, okay, you know, what do I do? How do I navigate? How do I do this? How do I do that? So I was just like, well, what do I say? You know, a lot of people that have been doing it for a while, they have this, like, you know, little punchline that they say and, you know, different things like that. And I'm listening to you and I'm listening to all these audio clips that you have, and it's like, how the heck does he do this?
I was going to say, don't listen to me because I'm just winging it. Usually every week something technical would happen. Either I couldn't call in or Josh couldn't or the intro music wouldn't play or something. And knock on wood, the last couple of weeks since they come up with the Skype integration so that I can Skype my way right into the show here, things have been working pretty good. A couple of weeks, 5 minutes before the end of the show, it would kick me out. and I'd have to call back in. And, of course, all that makes you sound like a complete moron, when a lot of times it was the technical aspect. But once you get used to what you're doing and you get settled down in some sort of a format, then things will start flowing a little better for you.
I hope so, but be careful of Skype. I was actually, there's a Paranormal Chattanooga, I think that's the name of the show. I had called in, and everybody that had called in was all double talking. It's like you could hear yourself through the phone twice. It was weird, and it was just very, very bad. And Scott, who was hosting the show, had switched over to using a magic jack and called in, and everything, it just was fine. So you just be cautious of Skype. If you start hearing people double talking, you might have to find another way to call in.
I'm willing to bet that is something in the audio settings within Skype is not set quite right. Because if you don't have your certain inputs muted, you will get that. But yeah, I was using Magic Jack before. And it never failed that somebody would try to call through while I was in the middle of the show or something, and you get all kinds of beeps and everything else. So, now, were you hosting the show yourself, or did you have a co-host? Or
no, I was hosting the show myself. I actually had a few of one of my members that had ended up calling in. Another gentleman, Dave from Paranormal League of America, he called in. He was actually the one that was supposed to be the co-host on the other show, but because of the technical difficulties, and I kind of hung in there, and I ended up taking over the show because there was so much double talk going on. It took about 70 minutes to figure out the problem, so he ended up calling in last night, and it went pretty well. We actually went over the hour. We were talking about all kinds of haunted locations and, you know, EMF detectors and the humidity effect, which he's deemed it the Shimkus effect because we're actually focusing specifically on humidity. Itself, you know, on our investigations, you know, really paying attention to it. Other than that, it was great. I just hope.
You must have the gift of gab better than I do then, because I found this is my second radio show, and two episodes into my first show, I realized I need a co-host, because You'll just rattle on for just so long, and then you'll completely run out of things to talk about, and then you're just like, So when that happens, usually your co-host can jump in and cover for you and jumpstart the conversation again. So there's something to watch out for if you run into that. But I definitely wish you well with your show. Blog Talk's really great for being able to just sit here in your living room and bring on all these great guests. I originally was going to have this show on our local AM station, but they told me it was inappropriate content.
I don't understand that. Mike Booley and Jason, they actually do the Darker Side of Radio, and that they have an AM station. And I was actually a guest on their show too. And it's great because it's, you know, broadcasts locally, and they just finally started archiving their shows, which is good too, because then you can go back and listen. And Blog Talk, I like, is because if you miss a show, you can go back and listen to it, you know, on your available time.
Well, I like it. I pay for the premium feature, so I first thing I do when I'm done here is I download the show and then edit all the stupid crap from the beginning and the end, and then upload it again, because I've noticed once the show goes off the air, if you're still chatting with your guests or whatever on the phone afterwards, it still records all that stuff for up to like 5-10 minutes afterwards. So then when you play the archive, all that stuff is there, and you got to go up and get rid of it.
Well, we actually ended up chatting for about 35 minutes after, and it was all recorded. So, yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting, but, you know, talking about, you know, the paranormal, when you have such a passion for it and you've been doing this for so long. I mean, I remember when I started off and, you know, I had just a throwaway camera and just a cheap old, it's like the recorders that you get at Walmart, you know, the old cassette tapes, you know, and started off like that. And so when you start telling all your stories, and I could just talk for hours, all the stuff that I've ever, you know, encountered. So it's hard too, because sometimes somebody might bring up, you know, when you have guests or you have, you know, people calling in with tons of questions, sometimes that you might have this plan of what you want to talk about and what you want to say, but somebody else might bring up another topic, so the whole conversation gets shifted to another direction, and then, you know, you feel that you might want to, you know, bring it back to what you wanted to say, because if you don't, because it might be something important, it tends to make you want to talk.
Definitely, yeah. I usually have a few questions jotted down for my guests to cover, just in case we don't get many phone calls, but normally we do, and then it just kind of takes on a life of its own, and yeah, like you said, then I'll if things slow down, then we'll throw in a question and get it jump started in another direction or something. But generally, it's fun to see where the conversations end up, because a lot of times they end up in places you definitely didn't expect to be. Actually, let me bring this theory up to you here. Dustin was on the show last week, and we got talking about UV lights, and this is what he had to say.
Yeah, I've heard recordings of things where a UV light was all of a sudden thrown on, and you hear like this high pitched like a screaming sound, almost as if there's something that is adverse about the light that seems to be shining onto these things.
What's your opinion on that?
UV light, we actually tried that in one location about 4 or 5 years ago. We brought one and really didn't get, now it could be the location. I don't know all the technical, you know, answers to all of that, but we did get some really bizarre video where we had a UV light in the center of a room. The house was actually vacant. The people were moving, and we had open access to the house and for the, you know, the last few months before it was sold. We had this UV light set up in the middle of the room. Nobody was in there. We had a night vision camera and an IR light in there. And it was amazing, because at one point through the whole night, for like maybe 5 hours, there's one area where it looked like something walked between the UV light and the camera, and I can't explain what it looked like. It kind of reminded me of Alien. You know Alien? When he's like, or Predator. I think it's Predator. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he like looks that weirdness.
Yeah, it's just kind
very,
of a...
Very, very, very odd. And it was almost, had a very like glowing just around like the edges of the body, but it was very subtle and very faint. Do I think it was a ghost? I don't know. I don't know if maybe a bug could have been flying in front of the camera and, you know, it made the camera autofocus and come back, and it just made a really weird appearance. So UV light, it, you know what? If we get it out there and everybody starts trying UV light and then we start seeing more and positive results, then I would assume that would be the best way to try that and to get some actual evidence that it's working.
Well, the thing that struck me about what he said was, as soon as they clicked the light on, they picked up an EVP of a scream, almost a sound like it was in pain. And that just made me immediately wonder, do these spirits, are they still able to feel discomfort or pain of some sort? And he went on to mention that every time he's used a UV light and caught anything, they've always been a great distance away from the camera, like it's almost repelling them or something. So that just started me wondering, do these things have, you know, feelings or feeling pain or something, you know?
The only question that I would have without actually hearing that EVP firsthand is interference. I'm wondering if the light itself, you know, like sometimes when you turn on light, like overhead lights, the big lights in an office, sometimes you'll hear them hum, or sometimes they'll make a noise, or they'll pop. Without actually hearing the EVP, I don't know, and I'm not saying it's not valid or not genuine, but I would wonder if the recording or the device, whatever they were recording with, picked up extra sound, and it was interacting with the actual device.
That could be. I mean, I was just taking it was actually a friend of Dustin's, and he said he heard it. And I was just taking him at his word, kind of figuring that he would think along that same lines, too, and probably already ruled that out. But
and that's what makes it so hard. Because we're not, it's like unless you're actually physically there. And I've, in the beginning, when I first started, it's like I used to chase after orbs in photographs. And then when someone told me, hey, look, you know, that's just dust and moisture in the air, and, you know, kind of told me the mechanics of the digital camera and why that happens and the shutter speed, and it could be the light setting and the flash being used. You know, and then you kind of like grow with that. And unless somebody's physically there, me and you could go out and do an investigation and have something happen to us. We could actually see a full-bodied apparition, and we could get it on camera, and you're going to have 100 people out there looking at this type of evidence, and I can guarantee you maybe only 10 of them might actually believe that. Some of them in the back of their mind, they're going to be like, oh, that was just Photoshopped. They've screwed around with the video. You know what I mean? Unless you're actually physically there, sometimes it's hard to believe what somebody else might be saying.
Well, that's it. I mean, I've said before, when we finally do get that one piece of irrefutable evidence, and I don't care what it is, you're still going to have a handful of people that aren't going to believe it no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you just go out and do the best you can. A couple weeks back, we had Scott Crown over on, which has been experimenting with using UV cameras, and he captured a couple really good photos down at Gettysburg of full-bodied apparitions in the UV range, so or IR range, I guess, infrared. So it's kind of I'm not sure which way to go here. You know, we got some people trying in the infrared, we got some in the ultraviolet. It's nice to see people going in a bunch of different directions, because that's probably the only way we're going to ever find anything out. And that's why I love this field, because anyone can get in it. You don't need $10,000 worth of equipment. I mean, anyone with a $50 Olympus voice recorder, which I carry one in my pocket everywhere as I go, can flip it on. And you don't have to be in a haunted location. You could be sitting at your kitchen table. You could be driving in your car. I mean, spirits are everywhere, supposedly. So anyone stands just as much of a chance of capturing that one piece of irrefutable evidence as a group with $30,000 worth of equipment.
Thank you so much for saying that. You made my day. A lot of people, you know, they think that they have to run out and they have to get all these, you know, thermal imaging cameras, and they have to go out and they have to get all this equipment and have the, you know, K2 meter and the EMF detectors and all this other stuff, radon detectors. One other thing too, before I forget, before it slips my mind, and then here we go on another rant on another topic here.
There, hey, this is the Bipolar Paranormal Show. You go right off any direction you want.
One thing that I wanted to say is that people also should consider testing for carbon monoxide, even though in Massachusetts it's required by law for every household to have a carbon monoxide tester. But sometimes faulty chimneys and faulty pipes, you know, exhaust pipes for, you know, heating units or certain things that can happen, maybe a fireplace, maybe there's a hole in you know, the chimney that goes up and those fumes are being emitted. And it might make people sick, nauseous, feel weird in a particular room. It's, you know, it's odorless, so you're really not going to be able to sense it or smell it. So that's another thing that we've been taking out on investigations, just to make sure that all of our bases are covered, too, with that.
Yep, definitely. I mean, if you're coming from the public service or customer service angle, if you're not just one of those groups that are out there just looking for that great piece of evidence that you can stick on your website, if you're actually concerned about the customer, the client that's hired you, and making them feel better, then I would think, you know, testing for carbon monoxide, testing for high levels of EMF, you know, anything like that that might not even have anything to do with the paranormal, but if you can point that out to them, I think that establishes your credibility and shows that you're, you know, a caring group that goes above and beyond.
Yeah, and that's what we want to do. We're out there, and I hate to say we're there to help, because that's biting off another, you know, famous TV show there, but that's what we want to do. We've seen it too before, where you know, groups, and you had mentioned this, they go in, they do an investigation, they go home, they analyze their evidence, they go back, and that's it. That's all done. They're all done with those people. They move on. And to us, that's not something that we do. We go in. We're thorough. We make sure they're okay. You know, I give them my phone number, and it's like, if something's happening, call me at 2:30 in the morning. It's fine. If you're scared, give me a call. You know, I might not be so happy when I wake up, but I'm there to help you. You know what I mean? I want to hear what's going on. Maybe I can soothe them and comfort them, or, you know, make them get through what they're experiencing.
Exactly, because a lot of times the phenomenon doesn't happen in that short period of time that you're there anyway.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you're not too far away and they call you at 2 in the morning and say, hey, weird stuff's going on, you know, you can at least grab a voice recorder and run over there and see if you can get anything, you know, while the phenomenon is going on. And that only increases your chances of finding something.
You know something else there, too? As far as going over there at 2:30 in the morning, would I do it? Yes, I would. Depending on if how close that person's house is. We actually went up to upstate Vermont one time and did an investigation. It took us, they were like on the border of Canada. Would I do it then? No, I would try to get them through the situation and then maybe go the next night or something like that. But on taking, this is something else that we talked about last night. Linda and I one time, she's one of my members, we were talking, and she kept hearing a man's voice at my house. And she's like, Carrie, but it's like talking like when you're talking. I was like, Linda, maybe it's, you know, somebody through the phone. She's like, no, it's being responsive. And so I decided, you know what, I'm going to put her on speakerphone, and I'm going to go get my recorder. And I started recording, and right before she says that, oh, there's his voice again, on my recorder, my recorder was nowhere near the phone, was picking up a man's voice, which was interesting. So a few nights had passed. We're talking. She's like, there he is again. There's that voice. I'm like, Linda, okay. So she went and she got a recorder on her side and did it. And I compared the both voices, and it was different times of the day. It was, you know, and it was sporadic. She was getting picking up the same thing. So that's another thing we're going to be working on, is see if maybe the phone works with the same type of frequency level as audibly, that we're not being able, it could be transposed. It's kind of like a recorder, but we're not actually recording with a tape.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you're going down the right path. I mean, that's how you're going to solve these questions, is by just going in a new direction like you're doing right there. I think that's a great idea. I mean, you've heard stories since the telephone's been invented, you know, of dead people calling their relatives on the phone and stuff like that, you know. Once in a while you hear that, where I know that was my dead husband Charlie on the phone. And it brings to mind, boy, I'm trying to remember the whole story now. I've actually got it recorded somewhere on my computer. This, I got home one day, and there was a number on my caller ID I didn't recognize, so I called it back, and it was this older lady, probably in her 70s, living downtown here, and we got talking, and she said her dead husband told her to call me. And I did not know her, I didn't know him, had no clue. And she just went on for like a half an hour telling me all about him and how he comes to visit her and sits there in the house with her. And just a weird story. And I actually started recording the call a little ways into it, but I didn't get the very beginning of it. But it's just such a weird thing that I think you're on the right path with a telephone.
It'd be interesting. It's something that we're gonna start doing. Another thing we're gonna start doing is trying to do not like a reality type thing, but have like a live feed camera, and I don't know, hook it up to Wi-Fi or somehow.
That's what I was just gonna say. This era of webcams, you could almost have a webcam set up on a client's computer or something, you know, just watching the room 24/7 that you could watch from home, you know, and pretty much investigate without ever leaving your house.
You can do that. That's something else that we've also discussed. Or if the client doesn't have a camera, I mean, as long as there's, you know, document signed, because my camera's pretty pricey, you know, actually leaving the camera in you know, set up off of the computer and just leaving it there and let it run. So we've thought about different, you know, ways to do things like that. But it's interesting, you know. And you know, one thing that you know, talking about technology and the phones and different things like that, in some ways, I mean, people have really been investigating the paranormal in either the form of mediumship or you know, you got tarot card readers or people who could talk to the dead. I mean, that started at the turn of the century. I mean, it goes way back with medicine men and different things like that. And I'm just a little baffled sometimes that, you know, with the way technology has grown in the past 20 to 30 years, that we couldn't be more advanced than what we are now.
Well, I almost think with the increase in technology has come an increase in skepticism as well. It's so easy to manipulate things now with technology. I mean, just about, you know, anybody's got an audio editing program on their computer or a video editing program and stuff like that. So it's so much easier now to scream foul, where you know, 100 years ago, you had people out there making these claims, but, you know, there wasn't TV and all this stuff, so why were they doing it? It's not like they're going to be famous. In fact, they'd probably be ridiculed. So, you know, it makes, I give that more credence, something that happened 100 years ago, than a lot of the stuff that happens today, because the ulterior motives weren't there.
Right, right. Well, it does make sense. But, you know, another thing, too, is back before when original photography was started, I mean, there you don't actually ever, I mean, they've got some good ghost photographs that are floating around, excuse me, that are floating around that, you know, they're irrefutable. I'm trying to think of, there's one particular one, and I said it last night, it was at the tip of my tongue, and now I can't even think of it. There was one particular photograph of a woman in a cemetery sitting on a stone, and it came back from like the 60s, and it's been floating around out there for a while. It's not that there's another team that did it from some haunted location, very haunted cemetery. It's in the New England area, but it was taken. It was in black and white. It was very, very old photo, but when you look at that stuff, I mean, all the photographs of ghostly phenomena from way back when. You don't see orbs.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as digital photography started coming out, all of a sudden everybody's got orbs. So the technology with it, you're right, with it comes things that we need to work through. And, you know, like with the whole orb situation, everybody was saying, oh, wow, I got a ghost, look at this orb. You know,
I've got an orb photo that I got to have you take a look at. Give me your opinion on it. I took it years ago. Actually, my son took it. He called me up one night and said, he says, there's weird stuff going on here at our house. He says, I'm scared. You know, he's like, 18, 19, you know. He's like, I don't know what's going on. He says, dresser drawers are opening and stuff. So we were only about 5 minutes up the street, so I grabbed my digital camera and went down there. And I didn't really catch anything, but then as I was standing around, he just kind of snapped a picture of me, and then there's this big solid orb up on the ceiling, and it's solid, it's pure white, and it's moving. You can see the trail behind it, and it's not like there. We went back and looked. There's no light bulb on the ceiling there, nothing shiny, nothing to reflect or anything like that. So where that came from is beyond me. And personally, I consider it a pretty good, viable, actual orb. But I'd be interested to have you take a look at it sometime, see what you think.
I would be more than happy to, more than happy to. Speaking of orbs, I had a team probably about 3 or 4 years ago. I've had a team for 10 years, but about 3 or 4 years ago, we were out in this one cemetery out in Athol, Massachusetts, and it was really strange. It was up off 31 or 32, and all my members, well, there's only three of us, we were out there. We were just, doing some training and, you know, getting familiar because we got some new equipment and this, that, and the other thing, and all of a sudden, I turned and I looked, and there was this blue orb. And I rubbed my eyes because I didn't, and it was probably between the size of a softball and a soccer ball. It was blue, tealish color, and it's weird because it had a solid ring. It was strange. It illuminated the ground. It was probably about 6 feet, not 6 feet, 6 inches above the ground, and it moseyed just like, when you blow bubbles, like, kids, they blow the little soap bubbles and...
Yeah.
They just kind of like float, the way they float through the air, and that's what it did. But it was like swaying back and forth, and it went and went up into the woods. Now it was apparent for probably maybe about 2 minutes or so. We were taking pictures. We had video camera running. We were like following it, and I'm gonna tell you something. I was so ticked off when I got home that night because I was so excited. We uploaded the video. We sat there. We looked through all the pictures. Not one showed anything. Nothing.
Oh, man.
I was like, you got to be kidding me. I'm like, our cameras were working. You can see Chris looking at it, following it, as I'm, like, really quickly taking pictures. You can see him, like, pointing at it, but there's nothing that he's pointing at. I don't know.
Yeah, that would make me upset, too.
Makes me wonder.
I don't know if you can see the chat room from where you're at, but I posted a couple links in there to the pictures of my orb. So
hang on 1 second. I'm going back in the house. I was actually out in my barn. I have a nasty habit, and it's called smoking, and I have little ones, so I'm just
that's okay. I have the same nasty habit too. So, but
we don't smoke in the house.
Getting to the point where I can't afford it anymore. Oh, for those of you who just tuned in, I'm speaking with Carrie from Magic Paranormal. I didn't actually have a guest scheduled tonight, but apparently Josh had to work, so I was sitting here all by my lonesome, and she graciously agreed to call up and bail me out. So this is actually turning into a great conversation, so really appreciate her coming on here with us.
Wow, the room's got more people in it now. Jeez Louise, it was just you and I a while ago.
Well, a couple of them have actually already left, too. There was more than that there a few minutes ago. So they're coming and going here. I see Grave Secrets in there, always here, and we appreciate it. We got Ghost Rider Jim C. We got Hit. And we got... Guest 3491. I appreciate all of you coming in here. So do you...
I'm taking a look at it right now, and there's only two things that I question. One of them, and this is just, and I'm not knocking the photo or anything like that, but if you look at the television set and that one particular link up in the right-hand corner, it might be a reflection off the television.
Reflecting off what, though? Because there's nothing there on the ceiling that's reflective. If you go to the second photo, it's just the fake wooden beams up there, and that's it, you know, and you can see how it's actually got a trail where it's moving, but at least it appears to be.
It appears to be moving downward. I don't know, to be honest with you. I could send this over to somebody at IPI, that Ryan over there. I can have him take a look at it. But the only question that I would have would be the television,
mm-hmm.
because the concaveness of the glass,
yep.
how it, you know, it goes out. So if the light was going from the flash is going to go towards the TV, it's going to bend and it's going to go up out at an angle.
Yeah, I never even noticed that in the TV before. That's great eyes you got there. But
the
yeah,
only thing
my
that
thought
would make me question that particular photo. But other than that, I mean, that's basically what would appear to be like an orb.
Yeah, I mean, and my thought it would be is if it's bouncing off the TV, then it would have to be reflecting off something. But that's pretty much, like I said, there's nothing reflective up there on the ceiling. It's just kind of, I don't know, midair. So
right.
I'm not quite sure what it's bouncing off of. That's my only question. That in conjunction with the fact that my son said he was having paranormal activity earlier in the evening,
right,
which,
right.
You know, put the two together. So I don't know. But this was taken probably 7 years ago now, and I still haven't really received a definitive answer one way or the other, you know?
That's my opinion. When I see that and I see that bright spot in the TV, and because the TV is concaved, it would go up at an angle, and if it reflected off, if the flash, if there was like a particle or something in the air, it could have created it to glow. I'll send this to you outside of the room. I have a book. It's what we use as a handbook, and it's over 236 pages, and it's someone from IPI had put this together, and there's probably a whole chapter on orbs, from, you know, people taking pictures of bugs to reflective dust to reflections off of things, and it gives a very good explanation, and it might be beneficial maybe to help you in the future going forward when you're looking at photographs to be able to determine if it could be, you know, something obstructing the lens or if there's a particle in the air or those types of things. And another thing, too, is there's also a program, and it's free, and you can download it. It's EXF iData. And if let's just say, and this has happened to me before, and I let people submit photographs that they've gotten, and I'll drop the photograph into this program, and it'll tell you if a flash was used. It'll tell you the make, the model, the camera, the shutter speed. If the shutter speed wasn't working, if there was, you know, the way the shutter took the picture because of the type of lighting that was in the room, it gives you a plethora of information. And it's very beneficial because especially when someone's – and it'll actually even tell you if a picture's been Photoshopped.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
And it's free. It's free. Also, if you were using Windows Vista, if you have a photograph and somebody sends it to you, you right-click on it, go down to the properties section. There's three tabs at the top. And the last tab, it won't be give you as much information as the EXF iData program will. But what will happen is it'll tell you if a flash was used. It'll tell you the make of the camera and everything like that. So you can get your information from there. There was one particular woman that had sent in a photograph to us, and it was a legit photograph, but she said she didn't use a flash. And I was trying to explain to her reflective surfaces and different things like that. She said, but I didn't use a flash. And then I sent her the data, and I showed her how to use the program and stuff like that, and she's like, oh, maybe I did use the flash. So it's pretty interesting, to say
okay.
the least.
Yeah, I am using Vista, so I'll have to remember to do that. It said right-click on it, go to Properties, and then what?
Go to Properties. I'll open one right now, actually. I'm going to go back in. Let me take a photograph here. I think I have one on my desktop from when we went to the beach with the kids this summer.
Hampton?
No, actually, I don't even know where it was. We were just out for a drive. We were looking for a beach, Salisbury Beach in Rhode Island, and we ended up at some little cove. And okay, yeah, you right-click, click Properties, and three tabs will come up. It'll say General, Security, and Details. You click on the Details tab, and this one will tell me the date it was taken was 6/15, 2009. It says the dimensions of the camera. It says the picture DPI was 180. The bit rate was 24. It says it was taken with a Canon PowerShot A60. The exposure time, it says one thousandth of a second. It goes into the exposure bias. It goes into the focal length. It goes into all kinds of information that can be useful.
Okay, so I am assuming if no flash was used, then one of these things here would be like flash mode, flash energy, would have nothing in it or something?
Right.
Okay.
If the flash wasn't taken, and it's usually under flash energy, flash mode, yes, it doesn't, there's nothing there. Also, and under advanced photo, it'll actually even tell you who the maker of the flash and the flash model. So if let's just say if there's a recall in the flash, and sometimes this happened to one of my investigators. Hold on 1 second, please. 9 o'clock. My daughter. I apologize. She's 14 going on 40.
Hey, no problem. I got one of those.
But anyhow, if the flash is there, if there's been a recall on the flash or there's certain system errors with inside the camera, sometimes a flash will actually double flash and you might not see it because it's so fast. And it can actually cause weird anomalies to happen where one part of the room will be totally clear and another part of the room will be like all blurry. And it might give it like a very ambient effect.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just going down through a couple photos here and just looking. I haven't found any that used flash yet. So, okay, flash mode. Flash without strobe return. Okay, yeah. I didn't realize all this information was hidden inside Vista. So.
It's not actually hidden in Vista. It's just an extra plus with Vista. I don't know if XP does it. I haven't been on an XP system for a while. But the EXFI data, let me see if I can do a little bit of research while we're talking on the phone. And for those who are interested, I'll give them the link too as well. And they can download it and they can try it out for themselves. So,
okay,
it's interesting.
Yeah, it is. There's so many different aspects to paranormal research. Like I said, I went and bought two Olympus just handheld voice recorders, and I went and bought two K2 meters, and that's it. One for me, one for my wife, and we just go out to cemeteries. We go here, we go there, and she's gotten some weird stuff in the cemetery. First time she went up there, you know, she's at the very back of the cemetery, probably a quarter mile from the road or any sidewalks or anything else, and she picked up babies crying, you know, a real colicky infant newborn baby. And we went back up there, and sure enough, there's a couple babies' graves right there where she was at. And they were loud enough where they weren't coming from the street because you could barely hear the cars going by way out on the street. So,
And I'm sure if you guys would have heard a baby crying, you would have made note and be like, hey, wait a minute, where's that baby crying coming from?
Exactly, you know, exactly. So it's just things like that. You can go almost anywhere. If you ever get up up around the Bennington area here, you want to do a little checking out. Supposedly, the cemetery up here by the Old First Church has soldiers buried in there, both American and British and Hessian soldiers. And one of the stories is that late at night you can actually hear them arguing back and forth to each other, yelling at each other. So I thought that'd be kind of neat sometime to go up there and just see what we can pick up.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, interesting. And yeah, I'm not that far actually. I live in North Brookfield, which is, I probably am maybe a half an hour bordering to Vermont. I'm on the other side of Ware.
Ware?
Ware.
Yeah, I know Ware. I know where Ware is.
Yeah, I'm right off of Route 9, actually, so.
Yeah, I just had to throw that in there. oh, man. Boy,
We're actually working on, by the way, I did put that link up there for you. It's up in the chat room where you can download that program. We're working on a case, and I'm trying to get as many different teams out to this particular one location as possible, because this particular investigation, it's an outdoor investigation. It's the old ruins of an old prison camp and hospital. And when you were talking about EVPs, we were up there a few years back. And we're walking and we're talking and we're going to a different part of, you know, the camps. And next thing you know, when we got back, we're listening to the EVPs and it was like a gunshot. Now, we're out in the middle of the woods. There's like the nearest road has got to be 2 to 3 miles. So it's not like a car backfired. And if it did, we would have said something. Or if we were getting shot at, we would have said something. But it drowned out our voices. Like, are you kidding me?
That's weird.
But it was interesting because it was an old prison camp.
Okay. So. All right. Well, see, I also do Civil War reenacting, too. So
interesting.
Anything that has to do with history, it's like, you know, Gettysburg is my my holy grail place because of both the Civil War history and the paranormal that goes on there. I just have a ball day and night down there.
I have heard so many stories about Gettysburg, and I've actually seen some evidence from other teams that have actually done field trips down there. And some of the stuff that they've picked up and captured is totally phenomenal. And I appreciate the fact that they, you know, shared it with me because it's like the Holy Grail, like you had stated. It's just interesting and fascinating. And, you know, I know 9/11 was a very tragic thing, but it also makes me curious because it was such a tragic event. If anything is residual or if there's activity there too as well.
Actually, someone mentioned that to Dustin last week, if he'd ever considered going there and investigating. And just from the emotional aspect that it's almost considered a holy place, that he wouldn't degrade it by going there and doing an investigation. But I threw out there, I said, you know, that's not stopping anyone else from simply grabbing a voice recorder and walking up to the fence and just standing there and asking if anyone has anything to say. Because there may be some residual spirits there that have messages that they'd like to get out or something along those lines, you know. So I said, from that aspect, I don't see where that would hurt anything. But yeah, I wouldn't want to pile in there with a whole van load of equipment and just take over the place and do that, because that would be disrespectful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be. But it just makes you wonder, though. I mean, it's hard because I lost a friend in that tragedy. And it makes you wonder, I mean, like you had said, if there was like any last words or if you know, even if you did capture an EVP and you found something, I don't know if necessary if I would share it with anybody because it was such a dramatic time that had happened, and it did affect home. I didn't even think it was real. I'm sitting there for hours in front of the television, and I'm like watching with my mouth dropped open. But you know, the same thing with Gettysburg. I'm sure as time passes, you know, and things kind of die down a little bit, I'm sure you know, there are going to be people that are going to go out there if there already hasn't been.
Well, yeah, I could see it maybe the next generation, you know, as the personal aspect of it becomes more and more remote, you know, where there's there's not so many people around that are personally affected by it, then I could see people going there. But then again, you don't even know what's going to be on that spot at that particular point either, you know. It could be totally changed. That's why I'm so glad Gettysburg has been preserved, because it's pretty much the same as it was then, you know. And and that, I think, is what keeps a lot of the spirits around, because they don't see a lot of sprawl and a lot of progress there. So it's not really, you know, they can actually believe that they're still back in 1863, you know.
Right.
I mean, there's a story when they were filming the movie Gettysburg, and some of the reenactors were standing there by the wood line, and a gentleman actually stepped out of the woods and handed them a cartridge, and then disappeared back in the woods. And when they got looking it over, it was authentic. It wasn't like what reenactors use today, the type of paper and everything else. It was an authentic round with a ball in it, which reenactors don't use the actual bullets anymore. It's just powder. And, you know, he just stepped out, handed a friend of his, you know, a comrade a round, and then disappeared again.
That's another thing that with materialization of certain things, I mean, that's like a holy grail of the paranormal field, to be, you know, the validity in that. You know, let's just say if you and I were doing a reenactment and something came to us and, you know, we thought it was just another character, you know, playing a role, and all of a sudden you have a materialized object that was handed to you by something that disappeared, but yet you're still holding that object. Why is that there? How is this staying? It's not disappearing like that particular person did. It's in my hand.
Exactly, and it makes you wonder if maybe the spirits are going in and out at will. It's not that they're stuck one place or the other, because you know, it almost makes you wonder if they couldn't stay materialized if they wanted to. Or if the you know, it's the alternate dimension theory that they're actually living, you know, right beside us in an alternative dimension, and that sometimes they cross through the veil from one side to the other and then back again.
I've heard that theory from different people in the field, that they say that typically that they've experienced, they've heard stories kind of like the one that you had told us here, about where there's been such a tragic time that there seems to be some sort of portal from two split dimensions. Now, do I hold any faith in that? I don't know. I'm still on the fence with believing that, and that's probably just the skeptical side of me coming through. But overall, it does make you curious, because if that's the case, it would make sense why certain places are only haunted certain times of the year, or you're only seeing residual hauntings and people disappear into walls where there was once a door. But it doesn't happen all the time. It might be a 1 in 1,000th time that you're investigating that you actually pick that up. Do you know what I mean? You could go there 1,000 times, and only one time you might actually get that one particular time where the dimensions are, you know, hitting the earth or whatever.
Like you said, I'm not sure what's right and what's not, but it, you know, the fact that energy cannot be destroyed, you know, the energy is always there, and just changes form. So if the theory seems plausible to me that it could simply be vibrating at a higher a higher rate and simply be, you know, right here beside us at all times and all around us. We just don't see it because it's at a different, you know, a different frequency, basically. It's like tuning a radio, you know. You've got all these different radio stations floating around out there in the air at exactly the same time, but yet you can only hear the one that you're tuned into at that particular moment. And we just have to figure out how to set that receiver to tune into something different.
I mean, I do believe that. There have been times, too, where not only with the dimensions and different things like that, but also with even recordings. Some people, too, and Jim Brown from jimsdestination.com, you can look him up. He was also getting into the same theories with EVPs and different things of that nature. Hold on one second, please.
Sure. All right, we are talking with Carrie from Magic Paranormal, who graciously jumped in here and bailed me out when I had no guests scheduled, and Josh had to work tonight, so I was looking at staring at the screen and talking to myself for 2 hours, and she graciously bailed me out here. So we're just kind of talking about whatever seems to pop into our mind at the moment. Are you back yet? Nope. Sounded like she had another call, so had to jump over and take care of that for a moment. So while we're waiting, I'm going to fire off this little moment of shameless self-promotion.
Sending a heartfelt message is one of the best ways to touch someone, to touch the heart. But it's easy to forget birthdays, anniversaries, and other special occasions. Imagine how many lives you would touch if it was easy to send those heartfelt messages. Send Out Cards provides a way for you to send a personalized greeting card to a friend, loved one, or business associate in less than 60 seconds from the convenience of your computer. You can even add a gift or gift card. Send Out Cards is about helping people reach out to those around them. It's amazing what a simple message can do. Send Out Cards helps you act on your promptings to reach out and change lives.
All right, that's our moment of shameless self-promotion. So if you want to know more about Send Out Cards, simply go www.team, T-E-A-M, Shepherd, S-H-E-P-H-A-R-D, .com. Carrie, you back with us? Nope, she's still gone. So, all right, what else do I have in my my little... Oh, there you are.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No problem. I think it sounded like you must have another call or something going on.
Oh,
there,
no, so. No, little ones.
Oh, all right.
As you can hear them in the background. No, and I didn't want to be rude, and I don't think other people want to be hearing my little ones.
Well, it's not like we don't have kids, so we know how it is. I'm sure you've heard mine once or twice tonight here. So.
Well, I apologize for that, and I'm glad you see you're quick to the draw. You know, you worked with it. You know, things get thrown at you, and you worked with it, and you did good.
Well,
see, on the other hand, I'd be like sitting there, and it'd be like dead silence.
well, normally, see, we sometime during the show here, we have what we call our shameless self-promotional segment, because the radio show doesn't make us absolutely any money. So I usually Josh gets on here and tells about any events that he's got, paranormal events coming up and all this stuff. And all I've got is my little home-based business of kind of change the world one greeting card at a time, you know. So I got to throw out my shameless self-promotional commercial there. And so
I'm actually a home-based body entrepreneur.
Oh, yeah?
I have my own little business. It's called The Mom at Work, because I've done a lot of things, website design. I've built my own website, actually, magicghost.com. That's our website. And let me put the www.magicghost.com, because some people don't have the www in front of it. But I build websites on the side, as well as, you know, like little small mom and pop shops that might need a form designed, or they might need a menu designed or something like that. I'll go out and I'll do that, because they don't want to go to a high conglomerate and pay big prices, and they don't have the time to sit there and do it themselves. So I'll go in and I'll get the job and referral basis, and next thing you know, I'm busy.
Yep, yeah, I started doing websites back in 95, and like you, nothing major, just things for some friends and a few small businesses and things like that. And then I stumbled on Sendout Cards, which is basically like Netflix. What Netflix did to the video rental industry, you know, streamlined it, made it so you can sit down at your computer and rent a movie and all that stuff. Basically, that's what Sendout Cards does to like Hallmark cards. You know, and you don't have to go to the store to buy a Christmas card anymore. I simply sit down at the computer, I design my own Christmas card, I upload it, and I put in, here's who I want it sent to, and I click send. And they actually print out the card, and they mail it for me in an envelope with a stamp, and it's like 62 cents a card. I mean, so how the heck can you beat it? So that's my home-based business that I've got going right now.
Pretty interesting. But anyways, look, I'm going to have to let you go. It was a nice show, and I'm just going to take care of my kids here. And but it was an interesting conversation, and I really hope to do this again sometime.
Well, definitely. We're usually here every Sunday night, so 7 o'clock. Definitely come in anytime. I appreciate you jumping in here. You actually saved the show. It was an interesting show because of you, so it would have been very boring with just myself, that's for sure.
Well, thank you very much, and you have a good one, and if I don't speak to you again, have a Merry Christmas.
You too. Now, when is your show on?
My show is on, I'm trying to do this every Sunday night at 8 o'clock.
Okay. So you missed it.
No, actually, I did one last night because it was the first one, and I was just trying to, trying to test everything and do different things like that. And it's blogtalk.com/magicghosts. Ghosts is plural. And you'll be able to listen to us.
Okay. Well, I'll have to listen to it on the archive, because it looks like you're going to be on the same time as we are. So I'll have to download it after you're done with it.
That's fine. Actually, Sundays, it seems to be a very busy time. I don't know. I've noticed that certain times when you sign up, it only allows you to do either late night, or I don't know if maybe it's more so with premium members. They get more of a wider variety of time schedules.
No, as you get doing your show, probably about 3-4 weeks after you've done your show consistently and they know you're going to hang around, all of a sudden more choices will wind up in your drop-down list, because that's the way it was with us. Because we were originally 5 to 7. And after about a month of, I guess, proving ourselves that we were going to be here, all of a sudden they mysteriously just appear and you get more choices. So to stick with it, you'll get it.
Awesome. That's great to know. Well, it was nice. I'm glad that you had me on here. And I look forward to listening to some more of you talking.
All righty. I really appreciate it, and I hope we'll meet you in person here sometime soon, since you're not far away.
Well, you have a good night.
All right. Good night. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, and that was Carrie from Magic Paranormal, who was nice enough to jump in here and bail us out. And looks like we got Grave Secrets here in the chat room. I really have nothing much more to say. I'm going to play this little medley here that I played at the beginning of the show. This was Dustin Perry was on the show last week, and we had a pretty good conversation. He gave some very unique answers, and this is a little audio collage of some of the answers that he gave. Now, if you want to hear the questions that provoked these answers, you'll have to go back to last week's show and listen to listen to the broadcast, but here's what Dustin had to say. Hunters International, the what I found to be the probably one of the few normal paranormal researchers. I'm so happy to have Dustin Perry here with us. Dustin, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Al. How you doing tonight, brother? It's good to keep it real, you know. I've never been one of those star-eyed Hollywood types. I'm not going to buy any brand new sports cars anytime soon. Who's got the biggest EMF detector? The last thing you want to do is watch other people pull teeth. Pretty good with all the flowery dialect. And there seems to be something going on. I like to joke that maybe that evil slime from Ghostbusters 2 is real. Say, oh, don't use Ouija boards. I think I can use them if you want them. You know, they can be a fun little game. I don't think that Satan has brokered a deal with the good people at Parker Brothers to put out a board game to bring evil into the world. My little bit of high school Spanish only goes so far. I can translate very well if I was like talking to somebody like Dora the Explorer. He's like, well, you're not Madonna. I said, well, no, sir, you're very observant. I clearly am not Madonna. Kind of works like Whiskers, the kind of cat. Both fashionable and function. Be a tale of some guy who ate a lot of sugary snacks, watched a lot of cartoons, and just worked all the time. So I would have never agreed to go back out on the program. They're not nearly as fun as they used to be. You know, I watch the shows now with my daughter and stuff, and everything's in two different languages at least, and the storylines aren't that interesting. There's not a lot of violence, so it's not really funny. Big dose of violence in it. It's got some adult storylines in there that are underlying. It's pretty funny. I like that quite a bit, actually. It's quite funny. I have one that I carry around my wallet that my grandmother gave me when I was a little kid, and I still have it, that I keep in my wallet all the time. Whether you are celebrating Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, or Christmas, maybe you're just a winter solstice person, it works across the board. It's a wonderful, unanimous gift. I'm a big karaoke whore. You know what's really been working for me? The theme song from Legend of Zelda, the old Nintendo game. We kind of had similar crazy hairstyles, so I guess it all comes together. Sometimes, you know, we're at Walmart or something, and a girl starts screaming like one of the Beatles, and we're back in 1964. For my research and stuff, it seems they can be tricky little SOBs, so it's definitely something you gotta be cautious around. If I didn't have to shop there, you know, if they didn't have stuff on sale, I wouldn't be there, man. I hate Walmart. You throw out the baby with the bathwater, and now we're back at square one. You know, things like Google Maps are out there. I can see a picture of your backyard taken from space. So it's only an idea. It's only something that I'm kind of toying around with. I don't know if it's pain, anger, or whatever, but there seemed to be something that, you know, wasn't enjoying it. You don't want to start out like I did. You don't want to be out in the woods in the middle of the night and getting pushed up against some police cars. You know, here comes the big bad American. Next thing I know, I'm laying there flat on my back. Not playing with the full deck, so they're just like, just let this guy go. It's not worth the time. I think it was an important experience for me, though. But funny enough, the person who I see get harassed the most is Joe Chin. Well, I don't know what it is they're looking for on little Joe Chin. Sometimes I live on peanut butter and bread. But hey, you know, whatever works, whatever will get me through there. Cookie dough is fantastic to travel with, too. I've only been on the planet 30-something years, and I've already peed in the ocean enough to know that I should be eating out of it. Dinosaurs that are dead in there, mobsters, all kind of stuff I don't want to be eating off of. I don't know. I'm kind of an old-school romantic that way. You know, I try to be very gentlemanlike. I like to hold open doors for people, say hello, wave people across the traffic. I actually get affronted sometimes when I let somebody go. They don't wave thank you. They just kind of stare at you. They just talk on their cell phone and eat their donuts. And they just drive by you. It's like, well, why the hell did I stop for you? You're not nice at all. As I mentioned earlier, don't eat out of the ocean. Too many people have died, defecated, and urinated in it. It's not a good idea, especially sushi. You should never eat anything that's not cooked. It just doesn't seem to make much sense.
Hi, for those of you who just tuned in, everyone here is a crazy person. You know, I think there may be a valuable lesson for you gals here about inviting strange men into your bedrooms.
And now, Haunted America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Come on, let's get this gay show on the gay road. Help me out here.
All right, and my name is Al Shepard, and that was a little medley of last week's show, some of the answers that I grabbed out of Dustin Perry, so definitely taken out of context. So if you want to hear the questions that elicited those answers, go back and listen to last week's show. It was definitely a lot of fun. And also back in the archives, if you scroll back, we've got shows from Keith Johnson, a demonologist who was on the first couple seasons of Ghost Hunters. We've got Mark Nesbitt, the author of Ghosts of Gettysburg, along with Patty Wilson and Scott Crownover. We've got John Cordham, and we've got Paul Rademacher, both from the Monroe Institute. Definitely interesting shows there, dealing with out-of-body experiences. Back in the archives, we've got our Ghosts of Deadwood show, which was on the anniversary of the death of Wild Bill Hickok. We've got David Soma and Kathleen Lane, who are reenactors and also paranormal investigators there in Deadwood, South Dakota. That was an interesting show. We've got Ron Kolick from New England Ghost Project. We've got Michael Baker, the director of the movie 14 Degrees, is in our archives. Boy, who else? Psychic Gemini Rose, psychics Kelly Ballard, and Danielle, and I can't even think of her last name. Boy, she'd kill me for that. What else? We've got a few episodes of just me and Josh, proving why we're the bipolar paranormal radio team, just pretty much going off the cuff and going with whatever happened to pop into our mind. Vampires, werewolves, cryptozoology, paranormal photography, what makes something haunted. I think we're up to episode 24 now. So if you go back through, there's definitely lots of great shows there for you to listen to. I don't have a lot more to say tonight. I want to thank Carrie from Magic Paranormal for coming in and joining me and bailing me out. And definitely keep an eye out for her show, blogtalkradio.com/magicghosts with an S. And let's see, what else do I have here hidden in my little audio clip archive here. I've got one here of Josh. Let's see what he's got to say.
There was one machine that was going to point the ghost out to you and take its picture and have a conversation with it. Well, then that's what piece of equipment we would bring. But there is no magical machine yet, and we don't really know what we're looking for and how to find it. So we're using what equipment is available for us in this day and age to try and find what's unknown. We tend to try and use evidence that has other evidence to back it up. you know, for orbs, for instance, we generally, if we have just a single orb or even a lot of orbs, which is, you know, pretty indicative of dust. But if we just have one orb and that's the only thing in the picture and there's the only occurrence at that time, we probably will end up debunking it. We're not really passing it off as solid evidence. We like to be able to say, not only was there an orb in the picture at this time, but there was a personal experience taking place. There was EMF fluctuation. We captured an EVP in the room at the relative same time as the orb. In other words, we're not just relying on one piece of evidence. If we have two or three things happening at the same time, then we're more apt to really say this is paranormal opposed to just something that is naturally occurring. Different investigators work better with certain people. Everybody has their own technique. I personally sometimes like to taunt, you know, and try and get the spirits going. Some people aren't comfortable doing that, so obviously I'm not going to work with somebody like that. So you're gonna know who works best with each other and what their particular skill is. If I'm really good at EVP, I'm also not going to pair up with somebody else who's really good at EVP. I might be somebody who's more of a photographic expert. So, you know, you're mix and match who works well with what, whose techniques best pair with somebody else. Sometimes maybe I'll take somebody who's more scientific approach and put them with somebody who might douse and be a little bit more psychic-like. And we'll go from there.
And that was clips from Josh from the movie 14 Degrees. So if you haven't seen that movie yet, I highly recommend you pick it up. I believe it's www.14degreesmovie.com, I think. So I'm going to get out of here. We got about 3 minutes left. And so I guess I'll say my goodbyes right now, and we'll fire up a couple clips here to bring us to the top of the hour. And make sure you all join us next Sunday, 7 p.m. here. And I'm not sure what we're going to talk about next week. So we like to wing it around here. I'm liable to grab a guest from anywhere. Heck, I'm liable to grab one from the chat room. Right, Carrie? All right. We're going to get out of here. We'll see everyone next week.
Hello, this is 911. What is your emergency?
Hello, 911. You've got to help me. There's a ghost in my trailer.
Excuse me, ma'am?
There's a ghost in my trailer. He's a flipping and a flopping and a flying all over.
Ma'am, please calm down. Ghosts do not haunt mobile homes.
Yes, they do. I saw it on hard copy.
Okay, what is the ghost doing?
He turned the lights on and off, and then he knocked on the door.
Are you sure it's not the power company?
No, he's right here on the couch eating Cheetos.
Okay, what does the ghost look like?
He's invisible. I can only see the orange stuff around his fingers and his mouth.
Sound familiar? This scenario happens every day at trailer parks across America. Experts estimate that one out of every six mobile homes is haunted by a ghost or perhaps a possum. You could be next. Here are some telltale signs. A can of skull mysteriously floats through the air. Blood drips out of your simulated wood paneling. The room is spinning and you're not even drunk yet. If you think your trailer may have an unwanted guest, please call Trailer Exterminators. We specialize in mobile home ghost removal as well as the extermination of aliens, secret government bugs, and in-laws. Don't call 911. Call us now.
Trailer Exterminators, may I help you?
Yeah, the government has built a tiny robotic inchworm that has infiltrated my compound and attempted to steal my secret corn squeezing recipe.
Don't worry, sir. We'll be right over.
Oh, but hurry, because they're about to unleash a giant bat.
Don't delay. Call now. Double Y's X.
Just turned on.
It's a machine, but
let's go towards it and just see what we're dealing with. Oh, wait a second. There it is.
It's blowing out.
It's just air. It's not even heat or anything. Oh, oh. Oh, it smells.
I know. Oh, I know what it is.
What?
Someone's in the bathroom. They put the thing on the vent. And that's the fuck. That's the
that
poo smell. What?
We just inhaled someone's poo smell right out of the tube.